In Session with Dr. Farid Holakwi.
Good afternoon. Welcome to In Session. I'm your host, Dr. Farid Holakwi, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours here on Radio Hamra. Studio number call in 310-441-0555. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram or like my page on Facebook. Get updates on the show or suggest topics or books for the program. And the shows are uploaded at the end of each week to my SoundCloud page and podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Again, our studio number, 310-441-0555. Wanted to start off the show today talking about a psychological concept that I'll break down into can, want, need. And so there are things that we can do and can tolerate. There are things that we want, and then there's things that we need. But unfortunately, people can mix these up in how they feel about them or what they think they actually are or in how they express them to others. And this came to me because I would often hear people and clients at times talking about something they can do. So let's say something's going on in their life and, you know, someone's like, well, we need you to stay home because someone has to stay back. And the person's like, okay, I can do that. And so I noticed this personality style or the type of personality that often would use a lot of this can to define or express or even justify what they were doing often came from a people pleaser type of mindset, one that was not as focused on themselves. And so any of these things, it's kind of like when we talk about passive, assertive, aggressive, no one's only one thing or is always doing it one way, but we might notice certain tendencies. So I noticed a tendency towards this can. Okay, you're at work and the boss asks you to stay later. Well, I can do it. And that would be the way or the paradigm of understanding whether or not to do something. I can do it. But that's really problematic because a lot of times what's important in those types of choices and decisions is what do you want? So do you want that thing or to either do that thing, not do that thing, whatever it might be. So do you want to stay later at work? Do you want to be the one that stays back? That's a very different type of decision or paradigm to make a decision from than to just say can. Yeah, we can do a lot of things. You can do so many things that you don't like or have a different preference for or would rather do something else. So we have to be aware of that. If you notice that you use can as a justification to yourself or others, often it can come from this place of people pleasing. And as I was saying before, it doesn't mean you always will do this, and it also doesn't mean it's always wrong. Of course, sometimes we should sacrifice or do something we might not prefer, but just to please others in that moment or as a way of taking care of someone else momentarily. Hopefully overall, it feels like there's an exchange, but that is not something wrong to do. But if it's a tendency that you turn to a lot, be aware of that. I can do something is very different from wanting to do that. So the next one is a want. And most things in life are wants. Things that we want to do, don't want to do, preferences that we have. And sometimes people have a hard time holding on to this aspect of experience of wanting things. For example, you'll see a couple fighting about something that they should do, a plan they want to make. And I often see what couples are doing is they're trying to prove why what they want is the better thing. Or a very classic reasoning that people use is it's logical. Oh, it's logical to travel to this place because the climate is good. Or it's logical to do the dishes right after dinner because then they're all taken care of. And there what people are doing is they're turning something away from a want because we often think, well, if it's just because I want it, that's not enough of a reason. But if it's a logical reason or it's the logical thing to do, then we should do it. So it's not because of me, it's just the right thing to do. It's the logical thing to do. So people often have a hard time holding on to their wants, or they might devalue their own wants or other people's wants when really this is the majority of what life is about. Most things aren't life or death or something that you need or someone else needs. Most of what's happening in a day-to-day experience, relationship, whatever it might be, is about things that we want, we have a preference for, or we have a feeling about. But for some people who think of feelings as weak or that they don't really operate based on feelings, which is nonsense because we all do, they might think, no, it's not that I want this, it's that it's the logical thing to do, that they have a hard time holding on to that and valuing that a want is worth something, and they will do the same to others. Well, who cares what you want? This is what you should do, or this is what matters. But that is going to really limit what you experience in your life. So be aware of that. How do you approach your wants? And when you look at a relationship, be aware that usually when you get into a conflict, it's that you have two different wants in that moment. You want one thing, your partner wants something else. And that's a lot of what we have to navigate, and it doesn't mean you have to prove that someone is right or wrong, that what you want is good and what they want is bad, or to prove it's not even about feelings, it's just something logical. That's not going to get you very far because it's not really addressing the real issue. So many times in couples therapy, you'll get to this point where really we're dealing with an issue of want, but the couple is trying to, each person's trying to prove why the other person is so wrong to even have this want or to do things the way that they do. And then the last one of these three, so we have can, want, and need. A need is obviously less likely to come up. We have some physiological needs like food and water and shelter and some basic needs like that. We do have some psychological needs, and they are incredibly important. They might not be as deadly when we don't get them. We do know, for example, that children, if they don't get babies that are newborns and as they're growing up, if they don't get love and affection and attention, they actually sometimes don't even live. But also if they do live, sadly, will have lots of different delays and won't develop well. So there really is a need there. And sadly, there's stories in history where, for example, orphanages in certain countries or time periods where they thought that giving kids love and attention would actually spoil them and make them weak, where they were deprived, where we unfortunately had to witness the results and the consequences of not giving love and attention, touching to babies as they were developing. So those are needs that we actually do need them to develop. But in our day-to-day as adults, you're less likely to feel that in that same way as a need. Now, unfortunately, some people with some personalities, they go to the other extreme where sometimes people might discount what they want. Some people overvalue what they want too much. And actually, even emotionally, they can feel like things that they want are needs. So they want to do something, and if they don't get it, they're going to feel like I'm going to die if I don't get this thing. And we've all felt this way before, even, let's say, during a breakup. People might feel like, I can't live without this person. Sometimes they might just be saying it in a very poetic way, but sometimes they really might feel that way, like, I really don't know if I can live without this person. Usually, you're going to be fine. It's an extreme pain that you're feeling from that separation, from breaking that attachment. So you can feel like you need that person, but you can survive after some pain, after some time apart. You will heal and move on over time. But in that moment, it feels like a need. But for some people, this can be a more regular occurrence. And even this is where it gets a bit dicey as far as trying to figure out what's going on, because we could say that it's manipulative. Because if we're choosing what restaurant to go to, and I say, I need to go there. If I don't go to this place, I don't think I can survive. Well, you might give in to what I'm saying if I, in that way, emotionally hijack the situation. And this is how some personality types and experiences do deal with things. For example, borderline personality disorder, there can be this extreme sense of what is a want, what is something that is felt in that moment, becomes so extreme that it feels like a need, that feels that there is no other way but to have it go that way. And the reason why I was saying it gets a little dicey when we're trying to look at this term manipulation, manipulation clearly expresses this intentional manipulating, intentionally misrepresenting to get your way. And some would argue that individuals with, for example, borderline personality disorder, or people who might exhibit behaviors like this where they extremely will talk about how much they want something to the point where it's a need, that often it's not intentional or conscious what they're doing, that it really does feel that desperate to them. Or, for example, the fears of abandonment that they can have. I need to talk to you. I need to see you. All those sounds very extreme. And of course, we're like, well, you don't really need it. But the feeling and that fear of attachment or fear of abandonment can be so severe and so strong that it really does feel like life or death. And going back to what I was saying before about a breakup, one of the reasons why it can feel like we can't survive is that we know that our attachment feeling is a very strong one and does feel like life or death, because it is coming from the attachment we created as a child with our parents, which is a dependency and life dependent bond. If a baby doesn't have the parents or anyone to take care of them, the baby can't survive. So it is a life or death type of feeling, which is why it's so extreme. What you might see in some individuals with borderline personality disorder and related or features of borderline personality is that the feeling of abandonment feels like it's very close all the time. There is this constant preoccupation with this fear of abandonment. So even a small separation or a small slight or something that seems minor might feel very extreme, in the sense that it seems to them to signal that this is it, you're going, you're leaving, and that I can't handle that. So some people, and it's not individuals only with borderline personality disorder or features, but some people, even it could be a narcissistic thing where you're seeing things more for your perspective, so it can show up in different ways, will misrepresent, even themselves possibly misidentify something as a need when really it's a want. I want this. And as I was saying, it can work really well when you try to get things to go your way, when we exaggerate what we make a want into a need or present it as a need. Other people can, of course, give in to that. One, to just quiet us. This is kind of how when a tantruming child gets its way, and unfortunately it reinforces the behavior. But if you tantrum hard enough, I need this toy, and the parents feel like they can't take it anymore, they might just give you the toy rather than saying, okay, we have to set some boundaries. But the same thing can happen in our adult relationships where we might do that same thing. So it's something to think about, be aware of. We all have things that we want, and we all have things that we need, but we also have things that we can tolerate, and that's where the can is. But it's good to be aware of, where are we operating from more often? And also, are we at times within ourselves misidentifying and then possibly misrepresenting it to other people, and understanding where that might be coming from? As I was saying, if you go towards the can a lot, that generally will mean you are a people pleaser, trying to keep the peace, trying to keep other people happy. So you're willing to tolerate things that others might benefit from that maybe you don't even like. And actually, what often happens with these people, if you're focusing on, well, can I or can't I, you don't even think too much about what you want. You're losing that. And often people who are people pleasers will not realize they had a want or had a desire for something until later on, that they think, oh, actually, I wanted to do this instead of that, or I didn't want to do this, but now I'm stuck doing it, or I had a preference to go here versus there, but I just said, I don't care, I can go anywhere, because it seemed easier in the moment. And it takes them some time to slow down in the moment to get in touch with what is it that they actually want, and then to take the step that could feel scary for them, which is to share what they want. This is what I want, and to give value to that, to say, you want that and I want this, and they're both equal. We both have an equal say in things. But for many people, that would be difficult to share that or to put that forward. So can, want, need, being aware of these types of experiences, this way of making decisions, being aware of how we interact with others and where we operate from, and also how people are operating and where they're coming from as well. All right, let's go to our first commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In the previous segment, I talked about can, want, and need. And in that last category, need, where often people will express a want as a need, and sometimes they'll even feel that it's a need when it so impacts them. And so carrying forward on that to a degree, I wanted to talk about the tendency or some of the psychology or some thoughts on exaggerating our feelings. So there's a whole a personality disorder that we have, histrionic personality disorder. And so histrionics, you can even, you know, we use that term, like someone's histrionics being these extreme expressions of emotion. And it's a complicated issue because expressing emotions, first of all, just experiencing emotions and then expressing them and sharing them with one another and the intensity of them is such a big part of the human experience and something that I think makes it so beautiful to feel these strong things, even sometimes unpleasant things, but feeling them intensely or sharing an incredible moment of joy or passion or ecstasy, being in a group of people and everyone is sharing a moment together and being caught up in that feeling, you feel some very strong things. Or artists will express feelings that make us feel feelings. So they'll feel something, put it into the art, whatever that is, and it causes us to feel something very deeply too. And we love that. That's why we love artists, because they connect us to a parts of ourselves that we want to feel, parts of the human experience. So much of what is good about our human experience comes from these intense feelings and feeling those things. Of course, if they're out of balance or happening too often, or if they get us to act in ways that hurt us, that can be very harmful to ourselves and those around us. So even that is a balancing act of itself. But I do think, just in my own experience and understanding what it's like to be a human being, having these strong feelings is wonderful, is something very good. And not only that, of course, for ourselves, they can feel very good, but expressing strong feelings can be beneficial. Now, of course, if we're erratic or we're doing it in extreme ways all the time where people don't really believe it, it can very strongly backfire. And we see that happen a lot too. Many people who have histrionic personality disorder, who express emotions very strongly, people will often dislike them. Many people will dislike them because it doesn't feel genuine. It feels too extreme the way that they're expressing emotions, and they can't connect with that, or they don't want to be around that. Of course, some people will really like that, and often you can see pairings of individuals who are histrionic with individuals who are narcissistic, because someone who is narcissistic wants to be made to feel that they're amazing and so incredible and just so better than everyone else. And so someone who's histrionic can initially give them that feeling by reacting so extremely to them and whatever they admire about them. And so the histrionic is just being themselves, and the narcissist is feeling like, this is who I am or who I want to be, and in a way can match up really nice to begin with. Usually doesn't go very well for too long, but we can see the initial attraction and initial chemistry, if you want to call it that, chemistry that later turns into an explosion, that's there because it feels good. I express things so strongly and want to be bonding with someone very strong, and the other person wants to be seen as this bigger than life kind of person, so it works out in that way until it doesn't. So people do at times like the feeling of someone who is histrionic and being around them and expressing things in those ways. Now, even when I say, you know, histrionic personality disorder, there definitely are these, you know, disorders in the psychiatric literature that we diagnose people with and that are there. But really, oftentimes, I think it's even more important to think of not just do you meet certain criteria to fully qualify for a diagnosis, but more certain characteristics or ways of being that all of us might have to a certain degree, but some might express much more. So a cluster of characteristics or sets of behaviors and actions that we're talking about. So it's not just about would you be diagnosed or not when I'm talking in this conversation. It's about much more than that. So as I was saying, yes, we often can be really put off by people expressing things too strongly, but it also does make an impact when you express things more strongly. And so now I wanted to transition, because in day-to-day life this happens, but I think something we're seeing online to me is very concerning related to this notion of being histrionic, where feeling things strongly, having strong experiences is wonderful and very good. And I think that's a big part of the human experience and something we should strive towards. However, we also know with any type of emotion or any type of characteristic that can get you attention, there's going to be a tendency to exploit that as well. So in this case, yes, if you express things very strongly, people can feel very good about that, or at times feel good being around that intensity. But what you're seeing online, and I see so much of, and I find concerning, is people who just have these crazy extreme reactions, and then those videos go viral. And not only that, some of these people become very famous or well known within the streaming and online community because they are known for having these really crazy reactions, which is kind of funny, but unfortunately it just I think is reinforcing expressions that are not genuine, expressions and experiences that are not real, that are just fake and fabricated to get attention. So in general, online, we know that it is a very polarizing type of environment, and it is trying to attract, trying not even necessarily nefariously or with intention, but it's just trying to, it will promote the things that get the most attention. And the things that get the most attention are going to be things that are more extreme. So let's, you know, forgetting about even these kinds of emotional videos, let's say, but even in how people express things, the more intense emotion, especially negative emotion, you put into your posts, the more attention it's going to get. So if you say, this group of people is so stupid, they're idiots, they're this, that, it's going to get a lot of attention, or more attention than if you say something more balanced from both sides. People that are with you, but yeah, those people are so stupid, and they're so happy someone expressed something that they're thinking or feeling or harboring inside themselves. And then also people that are against what you're saying, they'll give attention to it too. How dare you say that? That's so wrong and bigoted, or whatever it is they're doing to attack you. And it gets a lot of attention. Is it a good thing for society? No, almost never is when we're saying things in those kinds of extreme, especially hateful ways, but it's going to get a lot of attention. And so you see so many people online who have literally make a living and make a very healthy living financially doing this, just saying very extreme things. Who knows if they even believe it or not? That's actually not usually even the case or not relevant, because they become just this machine trying to produce something that gets the most attention, because that's what gets them money. And so they'll say the most extreme things, even over time, seeing what gets more attention, what does it seem like the audience and the people out there want to hear and also don't want to hear, what gets the angriest reactions from the other side as well. And so we're seeing just this intensification of things that aren't true, but most extreme winning. The most extreme ideas win rather than the most accurate, the most well thought out, the most balanced views do not win or get as much attention as the ones that are way more extreme. So we see that there too, where it's the intense emotion is getting more attention, and then it's just encouraging and reinforcing this idea that that's the way to think. And so I'm seeing it, you know, when you look at online comments, if you go to Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, it's obviously lots of adults and people of all ages, but especially I'm seeing it with some of these streamers and younger videos, younger people online, even the way I say that made me sound old, but where they are posting videos and these reactions, and it's just these so extreme, over the top, doesn't even make sense type of reactions, but people like it. It gets a lot of attention. So they're playing a video game and they lose, and then they're like throwing things and going crazy, and it gets a lot of attention, a lot more than if someone just got upset and said, oh, I lost. And so it's reinforcing these really unhealthy types of behaviors, and I think that's very unfortunate. And so I think it's something we also as consumers have to be aware of, and it's tough because a lot of times the things that might be more interesting, exciting to us might not be good for us. So it's kind of like junk food. Junk food tastes really good and it will really excite your taste buds and your brain, and they put a lot of research into trying to find the things that will make it the most addictive and to make you want to keep eating it, where from the chemicals and the way they are released and the way it crunches and everything is put into these products to make you eat them too much and to your own peril, for your own hurting yourself actually. It's the same thing with junk information, that we have to be aware that, yeah, there's things that watching it might be like, oh, this is so funny. Look at this guy. You know, he lost the game and he broke his TV, or, you know, he, you know, this happened and he's going crazy and screaming and throwing things. It could be entertaining. I get that it's more entertaining than someone not doing those things or being very calm, but we have to be aware of the junk that it's feeding us and our brains and what we get used to and what we adapt to, based on being exposed repeatedly to these types of things. Because it does affect us whether we want to accept it or not. We can just think, oh, I'm watching someone, I think it's funny or it's interesting. But we are being affected by it, and we're also reinforcing these things getting more attention. So I think it's important to be a more careful consumer of what you put into your brain and to your body that way, because these things do have an effect on us. But also I think it's concerning because I'm seeing this more and more people who are seeing these, and people that are now making millions of dollars because one of the things they do is have these crazy extreme reactions, and kids and teenagers are thinking that's how they should be too, because it is a way to get attention. If you walk into a room and just start throwing all the glasses and breaking them, you absolutely will get attention and you won't be ignored. And that's actually something that we are all afraid of, is to be ignored and not seen. And so that's a way that you can't be missed if you are causing a lot of chaos. But is that something good? Absolutely not. And actually, in the next segment, I think I'll talk about this concept of how creating is so much harder to do than to destruct and destroy. But because it's easier, people often go into that second choice of doing something negative. But so I think what I'm seeing is people are just more and more trying to do extreme things. And another unfortunate part of our digital age and social media is because there are all these eyeballs out there and potential eyeballs out there. And so the better and more extreme what I do, the more eyeballs might see what I do. People are less connected and concerned with who they are interacting with in front of them, because they are thinking of people online who might see them and give them praise and give them attention. So I don't care if I ruin this person's day in front of me by doing some kind of prank, or, you know, throwing some water on them or making a mess on them or even hitting them, doing something very, very harmful, or destroying property, to doing something crazy that, you know, people would not expect, or being at school and doing something extremely disrespectful to a teacher. I don't care about the teacher or the person that I'm hurting in front of me. My focus is on what kind of attention it's going to get online. And, you know, actually using that analogy of the teacher, this would happen before too. The class clown was trying to get the 20 other 25 other students in their class's attention, you know, make them think they were funny or cool or brave or whatever it was. But unfortunately, like many things that are happening with our digital world, these things are just being magnified and amplified. So now instead of 20 people, it could be this potential of 20 million people who might see what I'm doing. And so that can push people even to more extremes, on top of, well, other people are doing similar things, so I have to make sure mine stands out. And mine will stand out by doing the most extreme, the most disrespectful, the most, you know, totally throwing all morality even out and doing whatever it takes to get that attention. I think that's really unfortunate. And I get it. It's entertaining. It's interesting. It's going to get attention. But being aware of what we give attention to, both for how it impacts us because we're taking it in, but also what we then promote by giving our attention to certain things and how that's going to affect what becomes more popular, what becomes the norm. So I know it's always easy to have these, oh, the internet is bad, social media is bad. I always think it's important to have a nuanced conversation and approach to look at. Of course, there's so many positives I didn't touch on in this segment, but I have before, but some specifics of those negatives that we want to be aware of, because I'm watching just so much of this incredibly extreme, you know, these histrionic type of reactions that are making people very popular and famous. And I think it's really unhealthy, and an unhealthy trend, just something to look out for. Let's go into another commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In the previous segment, I was talking about this, what I'm seeing is more and more exaggerated emotions online, and people giving more attention to that, and it's more entertaining, more interesting, but I think very unhealthy, because it's promoting a type of reaction and response that isn't good for the people experiencing it, and good for people to emulate and think is a good way to be. But we're seeing people become very successful behaving in these very unhealthy ways, not genuine ways, and I think that's unfortunate. I even noticed this in general, this talking about not being genuine. I was thinking about the ways that people interact online, or the videos you see online, this short content format. And this is likely me sounding like a grumpy old man, and probably something that won't age very well, or might not age well, because maybe this is the direction where things are going. But there's a way that people talk online that just, it feels so not genuine to me, but it seems like that's the way people just have their videos down, how you're supposed to talk to the camera, or maybe not supposed to, but it's just the way things are being more often. It's just to me feels very disingenuous way of talking to the camera, pretending like you're excited, pretending like you care about something that you probably don't really care about. And it's just becoming the norm, to the point where I've realized that younger generations and kids think this is something genuine or real, or there's something that is there. So it's just something that I'm, you know, again, noticing these trends. I'm definitely not the first to recognize that there's all this negative ways that communication is changing, the ways people communicate. But I'm just seeing more and more of this type of communication that, to me, is very, it feels very fake, but it's becoming so common that I don't think people see it as fake anymore. So I'm not sure if just I'm maybe behind, or if I'm just still old-fashioned in some ways, but I have a very hard time with connecting with what I see often online. And this relates to, I know I said I was going to talk about destroying being harder than creating, and maybe I still will later, but just to continue this theme of things that are not so genuine but get attention. This is related to videos we see in general, but especially things related to health and wellness, pop psychology, but also physical health, training, whatever it might be. And this is the obsession with the quick fixes and the life hacks that everyone has. So how do we find, okay, well, you know, I want to get in shape, but like, how do you do it the quickest? You know, a lot of this work smarter, not harder, which I don't think it's wrong to want to work smarter, not harder. But I think, unfortunately, people are trying to do things in unrealistic ways, or not recognizing that things take time. Progress takes time, and you have to be ready for that and not expect that it's going to come about quickly, or that there's some secret. And, you know, everyone is out there pretending or promoting that they have the secret, that they've figured out. And so if you just listen to them, follow their secret, you're going to be okay. So the short content, short limit of the content, along with our short attention spans related to that, and maybe even in some ways caused by that and a consequence of that, makes us also have a short attention span or a short patience for trying to make change or make things happen. And so I'm often frustrated with, I see there's a lot of me venting about things I don't like about social media and online things, but I get frustrated seeing so many of these types of videos that try to create these quick fix solutions, and they do get a lot of attention. And I can totally get it, that if you make things that are complicated seem easy, people are gonna like that. And sometimes it could be good to make things that are complicated less complicated, but You can't make things that are complicated easy. You can't make romantic relationships easy or parenting easy and life in general easy. There are things we can learn from one another and from people who have things to share on their perspective, but making it easy is just not possible. It's just not real. But people are looking for that, and it's definitely out there. Again, if you say, I have a plan to make you get in shape and it's going to take you 2 years, and someone else says, I have one that's going to take 2 weeks, well, people are like, well, let me listen to this 2 weeks person first before I look to that 2 years person. So we see a lot of these these types of creators get more attention. And then often we learn later on that some of these people that were wellness experts themselves were not so, were a little bit unwell themselves, that even they were not exactly following their own protocols or were using other types of things. This is in the health realm, or in the mental health realm or pop psychology, sometimes oversimplifying things. And I'm to name names, but I've just seen recent reports on people that were doing some things that were a little bit more unsavory in their lives and also in the things that they were promoting. And it just is such a cycle that repeats itself so often that people come into the public sphere who then get put on a pedestal, and they want to be on that pedestal too, but we also want to put them there because they, of course, want the attention, fame, and feed their narcissism or escape their own insecurities that comes from being put on a pedestal and having so many people follow them and be attracted to them and want them and trust everything that they say. And we also want the comfort of feeling that there's someone there who has the answers. So it's almost like how people can turn to God. We also turn to people, and we make gods out of people because, well, if this person is so wise and knows everything about everything or knows everything about this big area of life, if I just follow them, then I'm going to be okay. And there's something very comforting in going towards the person who we think has all the answers. It makes sense if I tell you this person, if you follow everything they say, you're going to be happy, healthy, have a good relationship, whatever it is. That's really comforting. But the reality is that, as I've said before, no one can do the thinking for you. People can give you their thoughts and ideas, as I try to do on this show, but no one can actually do all the thinking for you or has it all figured out. And we have to accept that. Someone might be wise and might have great opinions, and that's great, but even the wise person is wrong about lots of things. Even Einstein was wrong about things related to physics and science. As brilliant as he was and as great as he contributed to things, if we just take everything he said ever about even scientific matters, we would be wrong sometimes because he was wrong sometimes. And then people also, well, because Einstein is a genius, they'll share quotes he had about love. And I'm not saying his quotes about love or God or other things, I'm not anti-Einstein, but the things that he's sharing about those things are necessarily wrong. Definitely not. There can be wisdom there and things to learn from it. But what I think is happening is often we're looking for some individual and it's based on their reputation, thinking, well, then they must be right. Well, Einstein said this about dating, so must be right. Well, I don't know. I mean, it could be something there, but let's not take it as truth. And as I was saying, that's about dating, let alone we're talking about some issue that's not even what he was an expert in. So recognizing that people are not all-knowing when it comes to things or anything like that is something that we have to be aware of. It's something that online we're seeing people that get this attention for having this knowledge or something that we think that we can just risk our life on, essentially. But we have to take that step back. It feels good to think this person just can't be wrong. It's a very, very good feeling and understandable that we would go towards that, but it's just not the case. And so often we see that these people, when they are given attention, or it's a similar thing what we see in cult leaders or even the Bikram yoga person who started Bikram yoga, we always see these people when they get a lot of attention, when they get what they were striving for, they inevitably abuse that power. And people who seek power will inevitably abuse that power. power itself is corrupting, but people who are already seeking it, that desire is coming from a corrupt place that's going to lead to bad things. But we always see them using that power in negative ways. We just see that cycle repeat itself and then start again. Someone comes up and they get put on a pedestal, and people are imagining them to be a type of God and has a special wisdom and is so great. And it just feels good for both sides. Like I said, it's very symbiotic. Obviously, it feels good to that person to be seen in that way and get the attention and fame and money and whatever else might come with it. And people love having someone to fawn over and to feel that they found something. It's kind of like you plug into this great power source and feel like now I'm powerful, or I'm safe, or everything in my life is going to be okay because of them. And so I think it's always happened. We have cult leaders that were gaining fame before the internet, and even I'm sure before TV. So whatever ways they had to communicate, it might have been on a smaller scale, but it was happening. We see this pattern of charismatic leaders that come, show up and take over people's minds to a degree, because they say, turn it over to me, and then they get what they want, and people are left unsatisfied and sad and heartbroken and in pain, and oftentimes still in denial, but going through so much. This pattern repeats itself. So we have to understand that as much as we're seeking answers, what I would say is seek answers, but not seek answerers, if that makes sense. Seek answers from people and listen and pay attention, but don't look for the person who is the one with all the answers, who has it all figured out, because that just doesn't exist. It isn't out there. There's no person who has all the answers about even a single topic, let alone all things or things about life. And we have to let go of that fantasy and fallacy. It feels good to imagine that it's out there, but it's just not. There isn't someone who can figure it all out for us, as nice as it would be for that to happen. We have to go through life and figure it out. Yes, we get guidance, we seek answers from lots of different places, but we have to realize at the end, you're the one that's going to know what you should do or shouldn't do, or you're the one that's going to have to figure out what makes sense for you and what to do in your life. That person out there won't be the one to do it. So you can just see this happening throughout history, and then it happens again, and we find out someone who is famous, turns out they were doing some bad things recently in the news with Puff Daddy. I haven't followed the case closely enough to comment at length on it, but seeing some really horrible things about what him and what he's going through, and actually might touch on some of that, the narcissism of someone who seeks power or wants to go forward, and how that might be connected to some bad behaviors. But we have to be very aware of this tendency, that it's nice because it's so much easier to stop thinking, even when you're, let's say, listening to me or listening to anyone, that I don't have to critically think about what the person is saying because I know it's right. And even this is something I experience each week when I'm reading a book, that often the person is an expert on a specific topic, and so I'm trying to learn from them, but I can never turn off the part of myself that is still critical and trying to be aware of what they're saying, what they're not saying, what's their perspective, what might their bias be as well. Not in a paranoid way, but in a skeptical, a healthy skepticism, to see what's there and what's not there. Sometimes we have to be careful that, yes, reading a book is good, but if we read a book and there's misinformation or bad information, it would actually be better not to read the book or not to get that information. So we have to always, in that way, be alert. We can't completely turn that off, as much as it would feel good to just not have to think anymore and not have to evaluate things. We always have to be aware that we're still responsible and have to have that that strong desire to really critically think about what we are taking in. No one has all the answers, and anyone that tries to tell you they have all the answers, almost always we're going to see they're selling you themselves, usually, or selling you something, because it's not genuine, it's not real. All right, let's go to another commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's go to a caller. Radio Hamra, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, I had to. Okay, I'm calling regarding a new relationship I have started, and I have some concerns about it.
Okay.
Okay. What do you need to know?
Well, I guess you could tell me.
I think it's
sure. Better. How old are you, and how old are they, and then how long has the relationship been going on?
I'm 44. He's 57.
Mm-hmm.
And we started it in like 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay, so very new. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, pretty new. Well, I have seen a lot of people. Like, I started dating on this dating app because I couldn't really get in touch with anyone in real life, so I switched to the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
So I met a lot of people, and nobody ever made me feel the way this one did. Like, the first moment I laid eyes on him, I had this calm feeling that I knew him for a long time type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was because of some stuff that he told me, but no, I just captured the vibe, I think.
Okay.
And he's really nice, very polite, like talking, "Oh my dear," type of talking, like that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have here is, I don't know, it might be a little bit too soon, but I asked him once or twice because I can see he's still on the app and he's active. Mm-hmm. So I told him a couple of times, "Hey, if this is good between us, if you're happy and everything seems to be going well, you may want to end your membership on the app." And he just laughs and, you know, says, "Oh, don't bother with that." Which makes me really concerned that, okay, are you, you know, checking other options while you are with me? If that's the case, then what's the matter, like, with our relationship that does not satisfy you, especially at the very beginning when everyone is excited and things like that? I need to know that, okay, if there is a problem, is it something that can be solved? If not, then don't waste anybody's time.
We have to, you know, so you're on different pages right now that you're thinking or wanting it to be exclusive or that there's no one else, but he hasn't expressed that yet. And you're saying, is there a problem this soon? That's not good because you should be very excited. But the other question would be, well, is it even a relationship yet? Because maybe he doesn't see it that you're in a relationship, that you just started, you know, you said it was 2 or 3 weeks. So that might be more the concern rather than he's not satisfied or he's not happy with you. It could be that he's not at a place where he thinks you're exclusive or wants to be in a type of exclusive relationship yet. And people do this in general, but in online dating that can happen where people are talking to multiple people. So that's a thought that comes to my mind and something that, you know, you possibly could clarify with him. But before I get there, as far as yourself and him, have you been married or have kids, either of you?
Both of us have been married, divorced. Mm-hmm. He has 2 grown-up kids, but I don't.
Okay. Yeah, so as I was saying, yeah, that would be my, you know, the way you described it, well, there's something he's not happy about, but it seems to me that you're thinking it's a relationship or we're already in a relationship and he's not there, especially the way he kind of dismissed your question about I saw you on the apps, it seems like, you know, he's not seeing it that way yet. How many times have you seen each other? You said it's been 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, but we've seen each other pretty often, like at least once a week, but it's been more than that, like sometimes twice or three times a week.
Okay.
We live pretty close to each other.
Mm-hmm. So that would still be like maybe what, like five, six times?
I'm going to say 6 times.
Okay.
At least.
So that's, you know, and you're saying in a short amount of time, that can be something, but it doesn't, you know, necessarily imply you're in a relationship. And that's why, you know, I know people avoid these conversations a lot, but I encourage them to talk about where you are as far as our, you know, or what are you looking for and where are we and what we're doing here as far as dating, because it seems like what you're talking about is what I want people to avoid, which is this misunderstanding that one person thinks that we're in a relationship where it's exclusive and the other person is not there, and that's just only going to lead to a lot of pain and also possibly damaging a relationship that maybe could have become something if things were more communicated. So that's my first thought, is that maybe you're not in the same place. And even, you know, you're saying he uses these very affectionate words, which isn't a bad thing, but it doesn't necessarily mean much either. You know, it's nicer than saying mean words, but it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, sometimes people also exaggerate using those words. I was talking today about exaggerating feelings to show a kindness and a closeness and, you know, things of that sort that we have to be aware of. Not that we are paranoid of them, but we don't take them to mean so much that, oh, the person said nice things to me, so they must have good intentions or want the same thing that I want. And one other thing about him feeling familiar, this is a complicated thing because you said he made you feel calm, which is good. Obviously, that's not a bad thing. But someone feeling very familiar, like you've known them a long time, can be good, but also it could often be bad in the sense that they might feel familiar, like our family feels familiar. And sometimes it's because of the unhealthy things in our family that makes that person feel familiar. So many times people will meet someone and think, oh, it felt so right at the beginning because I felt like I already knew them. It felt like, you know, they reminded me of just people, or I felt this connection to them. And sometimes it's for the wrong reasons, that they are reminding us of the bad parts of our past. And so that feels familiar, which familiar always feels comfortable, but that comfortable doesn't necessarily mean it's coming from a healthy place. So another thing to consider, and we might look at as we go further in the discussion.
Okay, sounds all good.
Yeah, so what do you think about this possibility that you think, because the way you're talking, it's like, well, we're in a relationship, but he might not be there.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I'm going too fast.
Maybe, yeah.
He's taking his time.
It's possible. And yeah, and he's, you know, only 2-3 weeks is not so long of a time. Even, you know, you're saying you've seen each other a lot, so possibly that's made it feel like even longer and feeling closer to him. And this is a tough thing. You know, I don't want to take away people's excitement and the fun they're having, but often I encourage people to take it a bit slow, because then it does feel like, you know, more has happened when maybe it hasn't. So yeah, it seems like you have this feeling where it's like, well, we're together. Even the way you talked about him is like, if you're unhappy in this relationship, or I'm not satisfying you in this relationship, but you know, it's not a relationship yet until you've really committed to each other more clearly. And again, I regularly face this issue with people. They say, oh no, well, she texts me every morning and every night, or this happened or that happened, so there's no way they're talking to someone else. And then they find out that they are, and they're heartbroken, and it could feel like the person is cheating even though they aren't, because you haven't made a clear commitment or made things clear about what's going on. But that can feel like a betrayal that then can destroy the trust before things have even got off the ground. So now there is some, you know, you could tell me more about what he says, because sometimes the person can mislead the other person to think that there's no one else, or, you know, that they're in a relationship, even if it's not explicitly stated. So do you feel like he's shared anything or expressed anything that makes it seem like you're in an exclusive relationship together?
Well, he's like I say, he's really friendly, and we both are pretty open to each other. Like one time, we were sitting there, and his phone rang, and I could hear a woman talking, and she was kind of mad at him. So he didn't say anything about it that day, but I asked him another day, like the next day, I asked him, say, hey, what was that about? And he said, yeah, it's like someone was, I met on the app before you, about a month ago-ish, before you, and I don't feel really good about her because she's doing this and that. And so, okay, then why don't you, you know, get rid of her? And he said, I'm hoping that she can understand that, you know, because I told her that I don't like the way you're talking to me or treating me, and she hung up on me. So I'm hoping that she understands and don't call me back again. I don't want to block her because I feel that's offensive and rude. And I said, okay, I don't think that's offensive or rude. If she doesn't understand, then she wouldn't understand that either. So if she's, like, harassing you, then there's nothing wrong with blocking the person.
Yeah. Well, that's not a great sign. You know, I mean, it does also make him sound a bit avoidant there, that he's not, you know, either telling her or expressing what's going on, and it seems like he's still communicating with her. Even if, why is he answering her calls in front of you, especially, is a little bit strange to me. I know you're saying he's very open, but that's a strange kind of way of being open. Why would you answer the phone calls of someone, especially you're saying that they're rude or the way they talk is not so nice, and then in front of someone that you're dating now? You know, I don't know if he's even making you jealous or trying to, you know, or even give you a sign that I am talking to other people, or I don't know what he was doing there, but it is a little bit strange that he would do that. But that does seem like there's definitely, he's not cleanly broken from other people, even to be going into a relationship.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking, and I can see he's still active on the app, and that concerns me. That okay. Should I, you know, not trust my feelings and just, you know, cautiously go ahead and, you know, be sensitive to everything that he does or says, or no, just be normal me, goofy me, and, you know.
What does normal you mean when you say the normal you?
I'm pretty kind of easygoing on many cases, but of course I have some stuff that I'm sensitive on, but very rarely something comes up. Other than that, no, I'm very easygoing, and I keep going forward. I try to maintain whatever is going on. Maintain the relationship or whatever.
So, you know, even
points that I can't go any further.
Right. So the way I'm hearing that, even the way you said goofy, now, and obviously sometimes we're being more genuine if we're being silly, but it was almost like letting the child play but not protecting her. Like, okay, she's having fun, so don't stop her from playing. Let her keep playing, but maybe you're the, you know, sometimes we're overprotective, but sometimes we're, in a way, underprotective, in the sense that we need to look out for ourselves more and not just keep going, okay, play until you run into the wall, you know? Realize that it could be so that, you know, easygoing sounds like positive, but I'm hearing more like ignoring red flags or not making sure things are, you know, I would rather you make sure everything is safe and then play. Now, we can't be 100% sure, but make pretty sure that things are safe. Make sure your shoes are tied and make sure the ground is not slippery before you just go out there and start running around and playing. But it sounds like, you know, things are feeling good with him. When they're good, let's say when you're close with him and spending time with him, it feels good. and you don't want to take that away. And so you don't want to even think of, well, maybe this is not good. Or, they're saying, now calling me, or so it shows obviously you're thinking about it. But what I'm hearing is like the two choices you presented were, being a little more aware, talking to him, asking things, or forget about it, just have fun until it possibly blows up, or just let it happen. So, that's something to think about, because I think there's a hearing you describe, it seemed like it's something we often do. We just think, well, I'd rather let the kid play as long as they can, but we don't protect them, and then we get really hurt, and then the cycle might continue again,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm, kind of concerned about, because this has happened before, so I kind of don't want it to happen again.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't want to be, overprotective.
Sure.
And not let the child play,
Yeah. Well, as I said, it's not about stopping her from playing, but making sure it's safe where she plays and that she doesn't get even more hurt by the end. So when you say this has happened before, so tell me what's happened before. What's the pattern that you've noticed?
Same thing. I try to be, easygoing and not to be sensitive to stuff, but then it comes to the point that, not a certain thing, but, like certain, a combination of certain behaviors I have had in my past relationships. I've been in three relationships, three long term or real relationship, and every one of them, same thing happens. That I go forward, take it easy, leave the person be, I'm being myself, and I let my partner be himself.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they take it as granted.
Mm-hmm.
And start being, not the nice person they were mm-hmm. at the beginning, and they try to do, whatever I want to do, and, since you didn't say anything mm-hmm. to the previous behaviors or other things I have done, then you have no right to say anything to this either.
Yeah.
And they become ridiculous and,
Yeah, but I'm glad you're aware that that's the patterns, that you're letting things be okay, and then, if later on you want to say, now this is not okay, or something different is not okay, they're responding, well, no, you're the one that just says everything is okay. But we do have to take responsibility from our side of that and to be aware of that. So again, that word easygoing, or that phrase, is something we have to be careful about, because easygoing sounds good and people like that, especially someone who wants things to always go their way will want you to be easygoing, so that makes it work. But something we want to be aware of is that anyone or in any relationship where if we say we don't like something, it ends, that's not a good relationship. So if we feel that we don't have the space, that we're not happy about something or we don't like something, that's not even a real relationship to begin with, but we might find ourselves in that pattern. Now, we're at a commercial break, but I want us to continue a bit about, even a little bit more about this pattern that you've noticed, and then we always want to make sure, well, am I walking into that same pattern again? So let's go to the break. Mm-hmm. We'll be back, okay?
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back. Before the break, we were with a caller. Let's go back to them now. Caller, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, so you were asking about this new relationship, or even maybe we shouldn't say relationship yet, someone you were dating for a few weeks now,
uh-huh.
and you were sharing that there's a pattern that you've experienced of dating someone and being the very easygoing person, but over time things mm-hmm. getting worse and getting ridiculous, as you put it yourself, and then relationships ending. So how long have those relationships been? You said, I think it was about three. And I don't know if you were including your marriage in that when you said three relationships.
Uh-huh.
Or
Yes. Yeah, they lasted, two of them lasted about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, technically one of them lasted 4 years, but the other one, out of the 4 years, I was, like, almost 2 years of it, I was running for a divorce. So I don't know if that counts.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one, the last one was 3 years. I forgot your question.
No, that was essentially the question, is how long, and then, you know, including the, and if the marriage was one of those that you were including in that,
uh-huh,
that pattern that was similar. Now, going back even further, in your childhood, if you can see yourself and your role in your family, did you have, well, actually, just tell me, how do you see your role in your family? I won't ask it in a way to say one way or the other, but how do you see yourself when you look at your family of origin, your siblings, your parents? How, what was your role like there?
So I was raised in a, as the book Healing the Child Within says, I was raised in a troubled family where the dad was, you know, the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And very abusive, and everyone should be, you know, following his rules. Anything that he says, whether right or wrong, otherwise, if you didn't do that, you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And my situation in there was, I'm the middle child, so two before me, two after me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always there. Well, as far as my dad, he didn't make a difference. He would be the same with everyone, mm-hmm, girl or boy. He would have the same behavior with all. But as far as my mom, always there, kind of, I don't know how to, if I can name that, but I was kind of mom's rescue, or something like
mom's
that.
Savior. Like you were here. Like you're. In what way were you that rescue for her?
Mom always asked me to do things.
Hmm.
Like, you know, for example, if she wanted to cook something, even though I was like not too old, probably 10 years old or something. She would ask me to help her.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that too. Not that I minded it. I would, like, I remember myself as a child all the time, next to my mom, whether she was in the kitchen doing something or in that other room sewing. I was next to mom looking at her, what she did. And she would call me for help as well and say, hey, come. You know, I'm going to go out, take care of this thing and that thing, for example, banking or whatever. Watch the food so it doesn't burn, or add the, I don't know, water to it, add this thing and that thing to the food. Make the food when, mm-hmm, I was older. Or send me, you know, shopping for groceries and things when she was running out. And sometimes I remember I asked her, why do you always ask me? Because I hated going out for the shopping. I don't know if you're familiar or not, but as a girl going out in Iran, you had to cover yourself, change, mm-hmm, your clothes and all of those things to go, you know, a couple of blocks over to the store, get something and come back. And I was hating that all the time. So whenever she wanted to send me to buy something, so why always do you ask me? And she would say, oh, the older ones, they have the school homework and things, like heavier homework, mm-hmm, than you do, and the younger ones are too young to send them out for doing things like that, so you're in the spot.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that.
Yeah, so, you know, even, you know, it was a lot there, but also it's a snapshot of a whole childhood. But you said your father was abusive. Things had to be his way. And with your mom, you were this kind of rescuer, savior, or someone that she would rely on. You're saying, you know, at first you said you liked it a lot of times, but also, you know, you're sharing some ways you didn't always like it or feel like, why did it always have to be you? But it does seem like your position, or you definitely learned that being, first of all, with your father, don't disagree or let them have what they want, becomes like the only way to survive that, or feels like the only way to survive that. And then with your mom, in that way, also being easygoing, whatever she needs, do it. Now it seems like later on you did complain at times about it too. I'm sure it wasn't, you know, these things are never just black and white, but we can see that that's something comfortable and familiar for you, being doing things for others and making sure they're okay, and even possibly being afraid, you know, to disagree or say something they might not like as much, you know, with your father. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining that's how you felt. And so this goes back to when this most recent person, it's not to say this person is bad, we don't know yet, but it's being aware mm-hmm. of what's going on and possibly taking a step back from jumping into it too quickly. Mm-hmm. But this person felt so familiar, as I said, that could be from a not good place. That, you know, it sounds strange because people say, well, how could I know they were someone who would want things their way, or, you know, would mm-hmm. make me feel this way. But unconsciously, we are drawn to people, especially when you say it just felt familiar, felt like home in a way, mm-hmm. and you don't know exactly why. Well, that's, you know, it often can be these things that it's triggering and bringing back from childhood. So you have to be careful about that. And unfortunately, those people mm-hmm. are often the ones we get the most attracted to, or feel the most intense passion for, are those ones that we are most poorly matched with, because they are bringing up something from our past. So that's just something to be aware of. So here with him, do we know, you know, is he like that or not? We don't know yet, but some things are pointing that way. But the thing that's most important, we don't know who he is yet, mm-hmm. but we want you to be aware of how you are being in this relationship or uh-huh. going forward. And so even as you're saying, this concern of, well, what if I say something and it messes things up or ends things, and, you know, I have to stop playing, or also this tendency of, I shouldn't say things the other person doesn't like, or I shouldn't, you know, bring up a conversation even they might not want to talk about. Although, you know, you asked about the woman that called, so again, these things aren't black and white, but it might be what keeps you from being more clear about what's happening between you and him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What do you, you know, you said he says nice things. What is it that you like about him?
Well, like I said, he's really polite. And he's watching what he says. Like, he hasn't talked in a way that feels, makes me uncomfortable or offended or anything. While other guys that I met, you know, I went out with all of them, of course, even texting on the app, some of them, the way they texted things that made me really uncomfortable, or I was getting the feeling from their text that, okay, this guy is not the type of guy I want. Mm-hmm. But this one, no, he hasn't, like, during this couple of weeks, he hasn't said anything or talked in a way that makes me concerned. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the way he talks, being nice, saying, oh dear, and, you know, he uses that word a lot. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's part of it that puts me in a position, like, wrong position, I guess.
Okay. So, I mean, even those things you said, though, I mean, like, polite is, it's not a bad thing, but that's also, especially in our culture, and I don't know if he is Iranian, but it's a very, this is how people mm-hmm. can be, and some people use those polite words more than others. It doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. mean they're nicer or going to be kinder to us. It's just mm-hmm. sometimes actually people who use them more, it's because they mm-hmm. do worse things, so they overcompensate by saying the nicer things more often. So yeah. It doesn't mean, again, he's bad, but I wouldn't take that, you know, he's a great person because he uses those kind words, or, and it's good he hasn't offended you, but it's almost like he hasn't done something bad that other guys have done. Doesn't necessarily mean something good or something, you know, you're liking about him. Has the relationship become sexual?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, you know, it's going back to this, like, the playing and having fun. Of course, it could be enjoyable, but we always have to be aware that that can make us feel closer to someone than we are, or feel like we know them even better. And you're saying you already felt that when you first saw him, but making the relationship sexual will muddy the waters as far as our understanding of who they are and what we have in front of us, and something we have to be aware of. So it's not that we say, you know, so that's something.
Another thing that, like I said, I never had this feeling with anyone else. And this was the first time, like, and there was another guy I was seeing for over 2 months. And it never got to that sexual part of it, because I never felt that thing with him.
Yeah.
But with this one, it was just like totally everything was different.
And you know, this might, something you said in the last segment, it was something like, should I just trust my feeling and keep going forward with it? Which I think that's the thing, it's feeling good, you're feeling connected, you're enjoying it. And those aren't, of course, bad things, but they are things that we don't want to give too much significance to so early, because of course we want to have attraction, we want to be interested, we want to feel good around them, but we have to also be aware of, you know, you yourself described your childhood as troubled, and so especially if we've had a troubled childhood, we often will be drawn to the wrong kinds of people and the wrong kinds of relationships. So that, going back to that analogy of the girl playing, is that we have to be aware that she might not be the best at choosing the right playmates or the right way to play, and we have to be aware of being careful that she doesn't get herself into a bad position or bad situation, because that's very possible. So that's where it's not either or. It's not either you have to be just trust your feeling and go forward, or you have to stop things. But I also don't think, you know, being aware of that easygoing, which sounds really good and maybe something that got you attention and affection growing up, and also initially when you met the people that you've been in relationships with, I'm sure it was something they liked about you, but it wasn't actually something good or healthy, and even it should be concerning that they want that. Someone who wants someone who doesn't have an opinion or doesn't challenge them, that's not a good thing. And so as much as it makes things go well and that they're like, oh, I like this, keep being that way, recognizing that it's an unhealthy thing for you and an unhealthy thing for someone to want from their partner. And so it should be more of a red flag than something welcoming, which is what it might feel like to you. So that's something that, like I was saying with him, and just going forward, I would encourage you to be aware of what am I not sharing that I actually feel or want or I'm worried about, and recognizing that if I'm not sharing those things, am I really in a relationship with someone if I'm afraid to tell them how I feel or tell them what I want or that something is bothering me? That's something, you know, that you want to be very aware of.
Yeah, that's another thing that makes me more drawn to him, because I feel like I can talk to him.
Okay, that's good.
A couple of times, one time after, you know, that call, and he explained me what it was, we had this conversation. And another time before that, I just wanted to, you know, up front tell him that, okay, I'm going to be myself and I want you to be yourself. And if ever any of us felt like something is wrong, we are not a good match, or we can't, you know, we're not comfortable with each other, just say it. Don't hide it, and, you know, say that. So we know where we are standing. And he agreed to that both times, but at least verbally. But I don't know, like, if he has really got into it, you know,
well,
has the same belief or not.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, he might agree to that, but again, not even think you're at that point, you know, or he might still like you, but not necessarily think that you're in a relationship where he's has to say if he wants to be in a relationship with you or not. And hearing you say that, it's a, of course, that's a good thing. We would want that in a relationship. But the you bringing it up, it almost seems to come from a place that you're worried the other person wouldn't tell you if they're not into you, and maybe just sticks around, or maybe you've done that. I don't know. What where do you think that's coming from? That I want to make sure we don't just stay to, like, you don't just stay with me even if you're not interested in me or don't think it's a good match.
Well, I guess experience. Like I said, because this pattern I keep doing, or I kept doing, I don't know if I'm still doing it or not.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, you know. And so, you know, again, it's not judging him or the relationship, but being cautious in how you proceed. But it makes sense. Like, let's say you went into business with someone and they cheated you, and then it happened again, and now you're about to go into business with someone and say, hey, please don't cheat me, right? But, you know, someone who's going to cheat you won't tell you that they're going to cheat you, right? So that's the hard part about these conversations. You're understandably trying to prevent that pain from happening, but sometimes just saying it doesn't mean that that person is going to either follow through, or, you know, even if they're going to be honest about it. But what I'm hearing in this relationship and or the dating, even, like, I, you know, is it a relationship yet, is that it feels like you're really going very forward with your feelings and too much, and might be good to hit the brakes a little bit. Doesn't mean don't let yourself enjoy it, but it does seem like you are going very ahead and maybe even already think it's something that it might not be for him. And it might not even be a bad thing that he sees it that way. You know, it's been a couple of weeks. Yes, you've seen each other several times, but we don't really know what it is for him yet. So I wouldn't want you to go forward too much in your heart, especially, and, you know, let your head be a little bit involved. Take some cautiousness as you go forward with this, and potentially soon have a conversation with him that's more clear about what's going on here, what are we doing, you know, just wanted to know. And then, you know, that might give you some clarity, just even based on his response. Does he give you a response you like? Does he avoid the conversation, which is not a good sign, because that means the person doesn't want the same thing that you want, and they're afraid to say it. So I hope you will listen, you know, rather than just playing, listen to what you want before you play, and make sure it's there, and then you play in the right place rather than a place that's not going to be safe for you. And then, because we are all very good at repeating the same patterns, and it seems different the new time every time, but oftentimes later we see that it wasn't different. So I hope you will be cautious going forward, because I get the sense you think it's exclusive in a relationship, but he's not there yet. So
that's what I was kind of noticing. One other thing that I thought about it, that I'm kind of both drawn to him because of that.
Well, how about this, let me, because we're actually I thought we might wrap up, but I don't want to cut you off, so let's stop there, and then we'll come back after the commercial break, and we'll wrap up, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Before the break, we're with the caller. Let's go back to them now. Caller, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, you said there was something, I think you were saying something like it's intriguing or makes you drawn to the person that you're dating, or you weren't quite sure about, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it makes me both drawn to him, and at the same time, it kind of scares me that I don't know if that's going to be a problem or not. So based on what I have figured from the way he talks and things he said, I take it as he has a very, not very, but somehow low self-confidence.
Okay.
Like the first thing when we met, he was asking me, "Oh, why did you, got interested in me?" And I don't know how to describe it, but with a couple of other things that I heard from him that made me think, okay, he's kind of a low confidence person. He needs a confirmation approval from the other person, whether it's a partner, co-worker, or, you know, boss, whatever, to, you know, feel like, okay, he's doing the right job and get that confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like I said, it draws me to him because other relationships I were into, my partner was totally the opposite. They were like, you know, controlling everything. So this is going to be the first time I'm with someone who's, you know, not really in that confidence position, that not going to accept whatever or things I say because he thinks he's the one who's right.
These things are always a bit complicated because it's not black and white. Obviously, if we say I like someone because they have low confidence, that wouldn't be a good thing. That would be being attracted to something more unhealthy. But if you're saying compared to people that you dated that you maybe think were too narcissistic or thought they were always right or thought too much of themselves, less of that would be good. And it is good to be in a relationship with someone who has the humility and the vulnerability to know that they're not always right and that they have weaknesses and to share them with us. So I don't know where it is there. I could see that something was comforting for you in that he's showing this vulnerability. And now, again, this is where it's not clear. Is that, okay, it's a vulnerability, he's a good person, a good partner? Or sometimes it could feel comforting. It's like, okay, this person doesn't think so much of themselves. Maybe I have more of a chance with them that they're going to like me, or I'll have more power in the relationship, or something like that can come up. So it's not clear to me. And again, now you've interacted with him more than those first comments, but we have to be aware, you know, words are important, but we have to be very careful not to go too much into the words that people say early on to let them show us, you know. So that's something that you know, I'm feeling in this dynamic between you and him, is that you want to believe what it, you know, it seems like he's telling you, and the way he's acting, and, you know, the polite and the words he's using to talk to you. I'm guessing he's used the word maybe June when you say dear. I don't know if that's the word you're talking about. And so it can sound very sweet and affectionate, but we don't know what's behind it or how much is there. Is it, you know, especially sometimes when it comes out too soon, it could feel good when someone so quickly gives us lots of compliments or uses very affectionate language with us. It can feel good, but also we have to be very mindful when it's coming out too soon. Sometimes that's not a good sign. It can almost seem like they're compensating, whether it's they don't feel enough, like you're saying, self-esteem, or is it because there's some type of deception or lack of honesty in how they're being, and so they're overcompensating. So just some things to be aware of, that when we hear those words, of course it sounds nice to hear compliments, to hear affectionate language, but we have to be careful not to make it too big. And, you know, it's show rather than tell. They have to show us if they're caring, if they're affectionate, all those things. And that takes time. And that, going back to the kid wanting to play, sometimes we don't want to have to wait to find out. We want to just start playing and letting it feel good. But we have to hold back a bit to recognize, okay, well, what do I really have in front of me? And that can only be shown with time. You can't know instantly who the person is.
Exactly. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, overall, I would just, you know, take your time, be very aware of the patterns that are repeating. Like you said, there are some things you're seeing here which might be repeating the same pattern. We don't want that. Of course, it feels good. If you've created a sexual relationship, it's going to feel even closer and something that we don't want to lose. Or also we might feel like, well, if we've had that closeness, I'd also don't want it to end because of that. Sometimes there could be a vulnerability if we've had a sexual relationship, that things should not end. But you want to make sure you're being cautious in how you approach getting close to him. And I do think it's important to clarify, to make sure you guys are on the same page as far as, you know, relationship, not relationship. What is he looking for? What are you looking for? And that can be scary because it could lead to the end, you know, could lead to things not being right, and then we have to make a harder decision. But I would want you to be in a relationship that's genuine with someone who's on the same page as you, rather than what would likely happen is you'd get even more hurt down the line.
Yeah, I would rather that.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not the right thing, I would rather end it and then go forward for some time and then find out, I should have paid attention to the red flags. I wish I had done it earlier.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. As I was saying, you're saying that part of you that says just be easygoing. You seem like, you know, you learned so often to not say the thing you were worried about or the thing that you wanted because you were afraid the other person wouldn't like it or it might create conflict or might be an issue. So your go-to is to avoid bringing those things up because it doesn't feel safe, and that's understandable. But recognizing that you deserve to, you know, be with someone who wants what you want, and then you would create a really nice relationship. But if not, yeah, you'll just end up getting hurt. But yeah, I hope you will give yourself that right to have those wants and to see if you can create that kind of relationship.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Nice talking to you. Take care.
Some conversations.
Yes. Yeah, make sure you have those conversations and hope they go well, but I hope they just bring out whatever is the reality of what's going on, and that'll let you make the best decision. Yeah.
All right.
Have a great day.
It was nice talking to you.
Likewise. Take care. All right. Yeah, this is a common thing we go through in dating where it's scary to have these conversations because we don't know how they're going to go. They're uncomfortable to talk about. Sometimes the person might even make you feel uncomfortable for bringing it up. So that's understandable. But as I mentioned with the caller, if we're in a relationship or we think we're in a relationship, but the other person doesn't want what we want, or we're not allowed to bring up what's on our mind or what we're going through, we really aren't in much of a relationship to begin with. So the tough conversations, they begin early in building a good relationship. But not only do they start early, but they don't go away. If you want to have a healthy, happy relationship, the tough conversations have to be a part of that relationship. All right, that brings us to the end of today's show. Big thank you to Ghazala here in the studio. You've been listening to In Session with Dr. Fadi Dalakwi. Zan Zendegi Azadi.